it took me to grow up, to be able to reach in for myself and say, who am I?
Yeah.
And who are you?
Yeah.
And
yeah,
no, yeah. I'm not that name you're calling me. And no, you're not going to hit me anymore.
Welcome to SpeakBravely.com's podcast series, where individuals courageously share their stories of hardship and suffering and the steps they've taken to climb out of some very dark places. Whether you're suffering from depression, anxiety, loss of a loved one, financial hardship, addiction, loss of your home to fire, or any other adversity that has left you hopeless and lost, we hope you will find in this podcast companionship and hope. Grab a lifeline and join us as we help each other find our way back to stable ground. I'm your host, Shawnee McBride. Please note that the following podcast was previously recorded as a video, which can be accessed through the podcast section of our website at speakbravely.com. Today's guest is Renee Christensen. She's a wife, mother, dermatology physician assistant, and the daughter of an abusive alcoholic father. Renee escaped her father at age 17 by getting married to an abusive husband. They had children together, and several years later, they lost their 15-year-old son in a car accident. Here is the inspiring story of how Renee took charge of her life and powered forward. Thank you, Renee, so much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
Yeah. And I know you have quite the story, quite the survival story to tell, so let's get started. So why don't you start by telling us a little bit about your childhood?
Sure. So I grew up one of four. I was the second middle, so number three. My mom had three of us within about 2.5, 3 years. Not quite 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a lot.
Time.
Yeah, so she was busy. So I grew up in Southern California, and I had two parents that stayed together through the very end. And my father was a blue-collar worker, and my mother stayed at home until I was 10.
Okay.
And then she worked part-time in the school cafeteria to be home when we were home and mm-hmm. be off when we were off. And so she was always there for us. And then I grew up with a very difficult father. So my father was an alcoholic. I never knew him differently. And we basically were in his way.
Wow.
Always. There was very few positive interactions with him.
What an interesting way to put it. Always in his way. And that feeling of always feeling like you were, you know, impeding his life in some kind of way, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were an expense. We were in his way. We were what you're supposed to do when you become an adult, get married, have children, without the thought of how to deal with
what
us.
That entailed. Yeah.
Yeah. When he came home from work, we would all jump up and start milling around. Dad's home. Dad's home. Dad's home. We'd be, you know, frantic and just waiting because you never knew what was going to come through the door.
Yeah.
In the later years, when I say late years, probably middle school on, he didn't come home. He went to the bars and didn't come home most of the time until late at night. If he came home early, it's because he got in an argument with somebody and was not in a good mood.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. So we stayed out of his way.
So that's a hard way to grow up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My mom, she loved us. We had no doubt ever that we were her priority. In fact, many times she stepped between us and him. And took whatever his anger was about to protect us. She was a good
Bless
mom.
Her.
She was a lovely mom. So it was tough growing up with him.
We have a picture that we'll share here with you. Renee, why don't you tell us a little bit about the picture?
So this picture I've kept on my phone for years to show people what I mean. It's a picture where it's worth 1,000 words.
Mm-hmm.
The picture of my father and the look on his face is what we grew up with. That look was daily. The only time he smiled is when he was around other people and was, you know, being his charismatic outer core.
Yeah.
But around us, we were just in the way.
And you're the little girl right in front of him.
Yes. So I'm about just under 2 years old. Mm. And you can see in the picture that I'm petrified.
Yeah.
He's got his finger in my collar and he's pulling me back.
Wow.
He was very physical with us.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so that is something that you survived. How was it then as you got older and became a teenager? How was your life having been raised by a father who was like that?
So we weren't allowed out of the yard.
Hmm.
We weren't allowed to have people over. It was very rare that we had friends over. They had a gate. It was locked. Not that we didn't jump it on occasion. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So as a teen, he became more controlling, and especially with us girls, my mm-hmm. sister and I, more, I guess, unwilling to let us grow up.
Oh.
And experience what teenagers experience. Mm-hmm. If we'd have something we'd get into, so for instance, I was a gymnast, and thank you, Billie Jean King, because of her Title IX, I was the first and only girl on the boys' gymnastic team at my high school.
Oh, that's a great thing to add in here. We love Title IX.
Yeah, we do. The next year, the coach quit, and another coach came on, and he started a girls' team and had that team well into the 80s. He was a wonderful, wonderful person.
So So when we're talking survival, and what are the things that help us to survive, certainly getting hooked into a team sport like that
mm-hmm.
and having, you know, adults in your life that are reliable and safe.
Positive role models.
Mm-hmm.
So I got going with that, and my dad came to pick me up at practice, and I was the only girl in the room. He didn't take that well.
Oh,
I was restricted from gymnastics from that point forward.
Oh, that is heartbreaking.
Yeah, he did the same thing with my younger brother, who loved baseball. He stopped him from playing. My older brother got to play for a little while, and he stopped him from playing because it really came down to he had to put money out, and we weren't going to get that.
Oh my goodness. I mean,
we barely had appropriate clothing.
Yeah.
There wasn't enough food, really, for growing teenagers. But he had cigarettes and he had beer and he had things that he'd buy for himself that he then never used, a boat, more than one. He had an Alaskan camper, but he never owned a truck.
Oh my God.
So he spent money on things, but not us.
Yeah.
And we were relegated to very little financial support.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And mm-hmm. so, you know, how you got from there to where you are now.
I left home at 17.
Okay.
This is the other good story. I ran off and got married.
Okay.
Fake ID.
That is one way to escape.
Well, I just went
from what you gotta do.
One set of abuse to another set of abuse.
Oh.
And didn't recognize it, didn't know how to deal with it. In fact, I grew up in a home that you just dealt with the ugly.
Yeah.
And I went into a relationship where it was ugly.
Yeah.
And, you know, with that, I can say that 90%, 80, 90% was fairly decent. We
mm-hmm.
were young.
Mm-hmm.
But 10% was really awful.
Oh.
And through the years with him, and I was married to him for 18 years.
Wow.
It took me to grow up,
and
to be able to reach in for myself and say, who am I and who are you?
Yeah.
And
no,
I'm not that name you're calling me.
Oh, my God.
And no, you're not going to hit me anymore. And I had enough.
Do you remember, like, did that sort of happen all at once, like it just sort of struck you, or was it kind of something that was growing in you?
I think probably it grew somewhat in me. I tried to get assistance about 6 years into our marriage, but he physically blocked me from leaving the house to see a counselor.
Wow.
So I got to see the counselor once, mm-hmm. and then he wouldn't let me out the door. Hmm. Then I started thinking I wanted to do some school, because I wanted to be a doctor since I was 12 years old.
Oh, wow.
And when it came time to do the FAFSA, my dad wouldn't give me the information I needed. He said it was nobody's business. Name some expletives in there. And so the deadline came and went, and I thought, there goes my dreams.
No financial aid.
So oh my I didn't get to go to school.
Wow.
And so that I ran off and got married. So then about 6 years into our relationship, you know, I was seeked out a counselor, and that was the first step for me. And then it was a few more years. I turned 30, and I thought, where'd my dreams go?
Yeah.
I'm just living the life. I've got mm-hmm. three kids now, and I'm just working and kids, and mm-hmm. I thought, I'm going to do this. So I went back to school.
Yeah.
So his father had passed away just before, so he was very wrapped up emotionally in that. I started seeing a counselor, and he didn't stop me.
Wow.
So that
counseling
started for me. He helped mm-hmm. me draw the line in the sand. Mm-hmm. I remember him telling me he's going to do everything in his power, everything, to try to get you to let him step across that line. And I remember standing there, just the confrontation of, you're going to counseling or you're out of here. And him trying to hand me his paycheck, and I just went, nope, take it and go.
Oh.
Did you make an appointment? And I've decided that I'm not going to go to counseling. I said, well, then there's the door.
Wow.
Take your check and get out.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I just want to applaud you right now. Wow.
It was hard.
How inspiring. And
it was
so
hard.
So hard.
But, you know, we have to stand up for ourselves at some point in our lives.
There are people right now who need to hear this, mm-hmm. and I'm really glad you're willing to share it.
Yeah, it was tough.
Yeah.
But that moment was probably the biggest step forward for me in mm-hmm. being able to be strong enough to say no.
Yeah.
And so we did go through counseling. He went to an anger management group or individual counselor. I went to a women's group, and then we saw the anger management guy today together as a marriage counselor.
Mm-hmm.
And what I figured out through that was I hadn't loved him for years.
Mm.
If I ever loved him.
Oh,
I was too young to know what that was when I married him.
Yeah.
But I was done being abused by him. By that point, it was verbal. There was no more physical.
Yeah.
But it could go physical.
Mm-hmm.
I knew he could.
Yeah.
So I was done.
So then what?
So, you know, abusers, they keep you in debt. So you never have the resources to get out. I got a credit card in my name only, cash advanced it, got an apartment, and I moved.
And your kids?
Went with me.
Okay.
So my daughters went with me. So part of the straw that broke the camel's back for us was our son was killed in a car accident.
Yeah.
He was 15 years old.
Yeah.
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 And I just couldn't take his baloney anymore.
Mm.
And he just pulled away from the family. Everybody grieves differently.
Yeah.
He pulled away from the family. And I was done.
Wow. And, not to take you back into the depths of what this was like, but, just a little bit, tell us a little bit about what your life was like after the loss of your son.
So, let me tell you about Matt.
Okay.
Matthew was the sweetest, kindest person.
Mm.
The only hard thing I ever had with him was 3 months of colic.
Oh.
And I thought I was going to die. My first baby was screaming all the time, and I had no help.
Mm.
And he got through that. And then he'd give you his last piece of candy. You know, he just was so loving. So when my youngest was born, he was almost 8 years old, and that was his baby.
Aww.
And I have pictures of him where she's spitting up on him, and he's just looking with total concern for her,
oh, wow.
not the spit up on him,
Aww.
Right? He wanted to come to the hospital for the birth. Oh, he wanted to change her diapers. Yeah, no, he loved her. He taught her to play chess when she was like 4 years old. He did a lot with her.
What a loss for her as well.
It was huge. She was seven when he died, and it was devastating for her.
Yeah.
So Matthew was a good kid, and that night he and his friend were going to go to the movies, which was in our little town 5 minutes away. And I said, okay. We talked about his friend's inexperienced driving, and, you know, I asked him when he went a few times with him, how was it? And, you know, he just needed more experience driving. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, that night, they didn't go to the movies. They went out to the countryside and picked up his friend's girlfriend and her friend, who got set up with Matt that night. Mm-hmm. And they went across the valley to a college town, and then they went into a smaller town where there's a mall and walked around there, and they were taking the girls back home. And the girl in the back seat was not feeling well, so her friend kept turning around to check on her. And I think everybody turned around. I think the driver turned around, and he crossed the center line and hit a guy head on. Killed both the boys instantly, killed the man that they hit pretty close to instantly. Wow. Girl in the back seat took out the console with her face. She survived, barely, but has lived a normal life. And with that, very similar to my mother, who had a major head injury when she was 15. Mm. So this girl made me recognize growing up with my mom.
Yeah.
Then the girl in the front seat had a lot of injuries, stitches, broken femur. I went to see her that Sunday. It was a Friday night. Mm-hmm. With her mom's permission, I went to see her at the hospital. And she just told me what they did and how sweet Matt was. And it was just very helpful. Wow. This began the final end of that marriage. I had no ability to deal with his baloney.
Yeah.
And we stayed together another little over a year.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And once I voiced it in the women's group that I didn't love him, and I probably never did, I thought, and he was carousing.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't care.
Wow, that's a sign right there.
I didn't care.
Yeah.
I had somebody tell me, I said, if I don't care, why do you care?
Yeah.
And I thought, why don't I care?
Good question.
So I left.
Yeah.
I went into debt to leave, but it was worth it. Mm. And I took my daughters with me, and I did not restrict his visitation whatsoever. He had them about half the time in the beginning, but then he moved out of the town, and then he couldn't have them after school every day.
Yeah.
He wasn't there, which is too bad for everybody.
Yeah.
So
then here you are, you're with your two girls, and have you gotten your education?
I was in the midst of my education. Okay. I was just at the end of my bachelor's when Matt was killed. In fact, I was doing a double degree.
Okay.
And for a year I was completely non-functioning.
Of course.
I'd study. And an hour later to take the test, I could remember nothing.
Yeah.
And I was, a good student.
Yeah.
I could remember nothing. My advisor had called me into her office and said, let me just sign you out. You have plenty of science. We'll sign you on a general science. I said, no, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
So I went back to school that September because this happened in March.
Okay.
And I did not finish that term. I finished my PE class. I couldn't finish anything else.
Yeah.
I started that September and just fell on my face really fast.
Okay.
So I went to her and said, okay, and she signed me out.
So for those who've been through this kind of a loss, I'm sure that that period of time right after was somewhat of a blur, probably very normal to expect to not be able to function. When did you start to feel like you had your feet under you again? And how, and was it just the passing of time, or were there other things that you did?
Well, you know, depression was huge.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, you lose somebody unexpectedly like that, you're going to go through some depression. Yeah. And I was non-functioning, and I went to my doctor, and I started Prozac.
Yeah.
Prozac brought my life back to me. It took about 6 months.
Yeah.
I didn't need to be on it long term. I've never been on it since. Mm-hmm. But it brought me back. I couldn't eat.
Yeah.
When Matthew died, I was probably close to 140 pounds. Mm-hmm. The last time I weighed before I started to turn things around, I was 114.
Wow.
And I lost more.
Oh, my goodness.
I was down to about a size 0 to 2, and I was a size 10 before. Mm-hmm. I couldn't eat.
Yeah.
I couldn't sleep. All I wanted to do was sleep. I'd go up to the Memorial Union to study, and I couldn't. I'd fall asleep. I'd put a sign on me. This is before phones, right?
Yeah.
Before cell phones. I'd put a sign on me, wake me at 12.
Oh.
Yeah, I couldn't.
That desire to sleep.
Oh, that's all you want to do is sleep. Mm-hmm. And it was very.
You probably need to.
It was a very difficult time.
Yeah.
So the Prozac helped bring things back for me. I got a divorce. I went through, you know, times of my own and got remarried. Mm-hmm. So about four years after Matt's death, I had gone through the depression, a divorce, dating a wonderful person who I'm married to this day.
Aww.
And remarried. And I knew I was ready to go back to school.
Yeah.
And I thought, gosh, I'm going to do PA. I'd been working as a medical assistant. I saw how the doctors worked. I saw how the PAs worked. And I thought, that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And so it was our first year of marriage. I thought, oh, God, I can't do this to him the first year.
Yeah.
But I did it to him the second year.
Okay.
He was very supportive.
Yeah.
And so wonderful. I applied and got in to Oregon Health Sciences University. So it's a top 10 school.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It's hard to get in there.
Very. I was very lucky.
And probably a little more than luck, I'm just going to say.
Well, I had good grades.
Yes, that always helps.
So I left my teenage daughters with my new husband.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
So, he was a gem. So I lived in Portland during the week.
What a great guy.
Yeah, he's a great guy. I lived in Portland during the week and came home on the weekends.
Hmm.
And I'd get a call. Mom, Bob says blah, 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 blah. It's like, well, Bob's in charge. But what would you do if you were here? Doesn't matter.
No, you're not going to work.
Nope.
With both parents here.
Doesn't matter. Bob's in charge.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Yeah.
My youngest tried to work that a little bit. My oldest was by that point 18, mm-hmm. Living on her own, school, you know, boyfriend.
Yeah.
You know, she came back home for a little while, but then she had it all figured out then.
Yeah. So a friend of mine who had lost someone close to him said that, this always stuck with me, you have to just go through the motions until you establish the new normal.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
So at some point, you began to feel, it sounds like, that you had established the new normal.
I'll tell you what you do. Every day is a new day without him.
Mm-hmm.
Every single day, every single month, every single week, month, you know. Then you hit the 1 year. You go to pieces before the 1 year.
Oh.
And the 1 year passes, and you've had this routine of missing them and honoring them in different ways. For me, I was out at the cemetery. There was fresh flowers on his grave all the time.
Of course they were.
During the heat, I'd go out and water the flowers. Every day I was out there. First year I didn't miss at all. Then the next year comes, and it's like, okay, now this is a year and a day, a year and a week, a year and a month.
Yeah.
I guess I need to start
easing
through this, and I started to back off how often I was out at the cemetery. I'm still out there a lot. Mm-hmm. I still go out there every time I'm there. My daughters needed me to be whole.
Yeah.
And I can say for the first 2 weeks, I have no idea. They ate, slept, showered. I had a friend there who took care of everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the next year, it was just kind of trudging through the days.
Yeah.
You know, I know they went to school. I know they got fed. I know they got clean clothes. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of, and yeah. I was dealing with their dad at that time too.
Yeah.
And so.
A lot. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had the girls in grief groups. We had children's grief group up there that they went to. And I drove 45 minutes one way to get them there.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. It was a group specifically for kids. And then the adults would be sectioned off, and then the adults would sit around and talk. So I went to several grief groups. So there was that, they called it Mother Oaks Child. Mm. And the children were split off into groups of age and type of loss. Okay. And then the parents all sat in one group, and we all just kind of went around and talked about our loss and talked about our feelings. And then I went to a support group in our town because we'd unfortunately lost 4 kids in 12 hours that weekend.
Oh.
Yes. The 2 boys and then 2 girls coming down from skiing were killed 12 hours later.
Oh, man.
Then we had another couple in the area that had, you know, unexpected teenage deaths. And then there was other people in the group who'd lost adult children. And it's the same. I can tell you it's the same. You lose them as adults. You lose them as children.
Yeah,
you're still losing your child.
Well, and so those support groups were probably helpful.
Very helpful.
Yeah.
Very helpful. Yeah. So I had a lot of counseling going on that year.
Yeah.
And I made sure my kids did too.
Yeah.
And so we were in a town of about 10,000. That was a huge, huge loss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Very close when you have such a small community.
Yeah. Home. Yeah. And so the day of the funerals, we all had them on the same day. The 2 girls had their funeral together and the 2 boys together. And we did it outside at the cemetery because we didn't think there was a place big enough for it.
Yeah.
And we had over 1,000 people there.
Aww.
And the girls were in a small church, medium-sized church maybe. And there were people outside the door and they had TVs up so people could see things, that sort of thing. So the schools were mostly closed down that day. You know, the teachers had all been affected by these 4 kids.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And their friends, and it just, you know, extended and extended. There were very few kids in the school that day.
Yeah.
So it was big.
Wow.
Yeah.
So one thing I want to ask you about is the fact that to switch over now to your new marriage, the fact that you found a man that was good to you, to me, speaks to your own healing and growth and sense of yourself.
Yes.
Because somehow you grew to understand that you were worthy of this man.
Yes.
Yes. And that's part of, you know, the counseling and the growth that you go through.
So interesting story for us is that the boy who was driving was his son. And Brett had been in our house since he was about 9 years old.
Oh,
so, So I get chills. I just
got chills too. I didn't know this. We had spoken before the interview, but I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So he was.
I'm glad you shared that.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so we went to the same support groups. Mm-hmm. Our boys are buried side by side.
Oh.
We both were out at the cemetery just about every day. We ran into each other all the time. He was the sweetest man. Of the 4 kids that were killed that year, he, you know, that at that time, so that whole year, he would go to those homes and reach out to their siblings.
Oh.
He would, at Christmas, he got Christmas presents for all of the siblings of all of the kids.
Oh, he is a good man.
He's
My
a good man.
Goodness.
He's a good man.
Wow.
And so.
You deserve him, Renee.
I do deserve him.
Yeah.
So. The funny thing is that our biggest joke is that I told him he chased me. But anybody who meets us knows that he's a very quiet personality. I'm pretty much not. But I'm telling you guys, he chased me. And he was a good catch. So he is just a very kind, and still is, very kind and loving person.
Yeah.
So I feel fortunate to have Bob in my life, and that I will never regret.
Yeah. Well, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Let me talk to you a little bit about your life now and how you keep balance and how you keep grounded. I know you're an artist.
Yep.
And I know that's probably one of your therapies. What else do you do to stay grounded? And
well, I can tell you, I can tell you that, you know, in the beginning, beginning of our marriage, I was in school. And then I was working, and then I fell into a great job, mm-hmm. and I just came home and said, this is going to go on for the rest of my career, so retire.
Yeah, oh, wow.
You don't have to work.
Wow.
And he was a mechanic on a farm, so he was in all the grimy, dirty stuff.
Oh, my gosh.
He was tired, and I said, you don't have to work, but if you want to work, you know, you work.
Yeah.
But that's the relationship Bob and I have, is that we are two individuals who come together, enjoy each other, but yet we're individuals.
Yeah.
So, for instance, I come here to do this. No big deal. My ex-husband would have not been okay with this.
Yeah, interesting.
So we do our thing. He's a baseball coach, or was. He isn't any longer. Mm-hmm. And he'd go to Oregon 5 months out of the year. And I'd be like, okay, I need to find something to do.
Yeah.
So I started painting.
Oh.
And hiking and kayaking and interacting with girlfriends. It was really good. Good for my growth to do that.
I love that. And that is a healthy marriage, in my opinion. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that, and I'm not a therapist, but because there are all different dynamics of marriages. But I do love a marriage where the husband and or the partners can be independent enough that they can have their own interests and the things that they love, and then come back together at the end of the day.
And that's what we do. Mm-hmm. I always say that I feel like the most important part of a marriage is to recognize that you're individuals.
Yeah.
And accept each other's individuality.
Yes.
And then love each other.
Yeah.
And that's what we have.
Yeah.
I didn't see that with my parents. I didn't have that with my first marriage. And let me say that, you know, Tom and I broke up after being too young to get married and learning to grow, but taking our background with us and continuing that. It was both of us.
Yeah.
I'm friends with him now.
Yeah.
I wish him well.
Of course. You know? Oh, that's wonderful. We were young.
We were too young.
Yeah.
Yeah, too young. And we both brought terrible baggage with us that we continued because that's what we knew.
Yeah. Yeah, you do what you know until you learn otherwise, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's absolutely correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, you know, we've moved on. He's been married as a little longer than I have.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I know, they're happy. We're friends. I'm good with that.
That's great.
And, you know, it was important that we remain friends. We had kids.
Yes.
And what would it do to my kids if I hated their father?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, if
I couldn't agree more.
If I had this constant thing going on, I just refused to engage in any of that in the beginning and continue to just be friendly.
Good for you.
And fair. Fair with myself and fair with the kids.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
We see each other.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
So, wow, what a story your life is. And you are tenacious. You have persevered.
Yes, I have.
And look where it's brought you.
Yeah.
And I so appreciate you being with us today, because this is exactly what this podcast series is about. It's about people who've been through some stuff, but they're still here to tell about it. And they have found resources that have helped them get through. So is there anything that you'd like to add that you feel like we're missing here?
I think the most important thing is that, and I focus on women and supporting women to support themselves.
Yes.
My feeling is that we can all persevere.
Yes.
Find it in yourself. Don't be a victim.
Yeah.
Because you will always be a victim if you allow it.
Yes.
But stand up. Take your place.
Mm-hmm.
And be heard.
Yeah.
And then reach out for what you want.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I feel like I reached for what I wanted, and I wasn't harming anybody to get what I wanted.
Yeah, that's a huge point right
there, too. And I feel like I did everything I could to support my kids and my new husband to move on and start my career.
Yeah.
Ladies, I was 42 years old when I finished my schooling and started my career. 42.
Yeah.
It's never too late.
Yeah.
I had a woman in my class who was 56.
Oh.
Go get
it. Love it. Go get it.
Go get it.
So now that we're reaching the end of our interview, I would love for you to talk a little bit more about your art, because I know that art has been a form of therapy for you. And at the end, what I'll do is I will add in some artwork for our viewers to see after the podcast. So if they stay tuned, they can see some images of some of your artwork that you use to heal. You say that it's all therapeutic.
Tell us
about that a little bit.
So when I mentioned that my husband went off 5 months out of the year to coach baseball, and I looked for things to do, the first thing I found in the newspaper was this art class out at Patrick Ranch. And it happens to be that Amber Palmer was running that class, and mm-hmm. we did flowers. In fact, I had those flowers for a very long time, and they burned in the Paradise Fire.
Oh, my goodness.
Amber then gave me a copy of hers that she did that day. So I have that hanging in one of my bathrooms.
Oh.
But anyhow, she started me, and I started going to her Mind Vacation watercolor classes. And I really found that what we were doing was a mind vacation.
Yeah.
I stepped into some acrylics and continue watercolors and acrylics to this day. Different instructors, different classes.
Mm-hmm.
But I paint at least, I get it, I like to do this in a group because mm-hmm. it's very social.
Yeah.
But I paint 2 or 3 times a month minimum.
Wow.
Sometimes I paint at home, mm-hmm. finishing up a piece. I frame them, I show them, I sell them.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to sell them sometimes.
Well, maybe we can get you some sales here. You never know.
Don't need to sell them, but, you know, yeah. I'm happy to share those things that made me happy.
Yeah.
And they make me happy, having a brush in my hand, you know, commune with other women,
yes.
most of the time, sometimes men.
Mm-hmm.
Just doing that.
Just kind of losing yourself.
Yes.
And having something beautiful to show and
when I have patients tell me that they like my art because I hang it at work, I just tell them that's my relaxation.
Yeah,
I can paint and think of nothing else.
Mm.
It's just what's in front of me.
That's what I love about it. And our minds need that sometimes to be silenced and just honed in on something. Something creative like that.
I describe it as being at a beach in Hawaii, and the waves are lapping on the sand, and it's warm, and a little breeze, and I'm painting.
Oh, I love it. I love it.
That's what I do.
Okay, so that is a suggestion, too, for anybody who wants a little mental escape, a healthy mental escape.
And you don't have to be good at it. You just do it.
Yeah.
I mean, my early paintings are... whatever.
Yeah.
And my later ones sometimes are whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't matter. It's the process.
Yeah.
And we all do different things.
Yeah.
And so as long as you're not regimented and have to make that flower absolutely perfect, that'll drive you crazy.
Yeah.
But to sit back and go, oh well, next page, that one didn't turn out.
Yeah.
Let's do some more.
Yeah.
And
just go with the flow.
That's what I do.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Renee, for being with us today. You had so much to share, and I just know it's going to be helpful to some of our viewers who've experienced some of the same kinds of suffering that you have.
You can persevere.
Yeah, yes.
You can.
You are a trooper. So thank you so much for being here today.
My pleasure.
If you have a survival story you'd like to share, visit our website, speakbravely.com, and submit an interview request. We also accept written narratives as well as written and spoken word poetry. Until next time, take care, and may peace and healing be with you.